Lives of Pitch, the podcast where we pitch the best films that'll never get made. I'm Matt Turner.
And I'm Tom McGrath. And the game goes like this. We ask you, our devoted listeners, to come up with titles that you'd like to hear us pitch.
We then collaborate, coming up with story points, casting, and even marketing strategies.
Without further ado, this week's title is... Dance to Save My Mother's Life.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa, indeed.
Ooh, yikes.
Yeah, that one is from Unklasab Mihir G. I believe that's how you pronounce it. If I got it wrong, sorry if you could write in and correct me. But yeah, thank you for that title. They got in touch with us on facebook.com/Life's a Pitch podcast. You can give us titles any time of the week.
That's our pitch for rock operas.
Rock operas.
Yes, we're doing rock operas this week.
A genre we're very familiar with.
Clearly, I've seen at least two.
There are many rock operas that we've had a look at. 8 on the Google list of rock opera films.
See, I'm in the same position as I always am, having seen maybe 2 out of any given genre. But this one, I'm among, like, normally everyone else has seen more of the various things than me. Yeah. There is a very, very tentative, nervous vibe in the room right now. Whereas I'm just like, yeah, you know, from that rock opera, and everyone's like, I've heard of it.
Joining us to pitch some rock opera movies is Paul Beauchamp.
Hello.
Hey, Paul.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
Good.
I've seen Repo, the genetic
the one we watched the trailer for just before this.
I only just remembered on the way over here because I was like, I feel like I've seen a rock opera. And it turns out that I had, but it was at like 4 o'clock in the morning after a lot of drinking in some random person's like flat back when I was a student. So like... 8+ years ago.
Wow. I don't think I've seen any on the list of rock operas, but
really?
I've listened to a few.
You listen to
War
of the Worlds.
War of the
Worlds. That's a rock opera.
Yeah.
It's not like your standard rock opera, but it's one.
Yeah, it's a rock opera. As always, if you want to give us titles any time of the week, get in touch with us on facebook.com/Life's a Pitch podcast and Twitter at Life's a Pitch Show. You can give us titles there as well. We ask for genres every week. Look out for those posts and then give us titles based around those genres.
Yes, cheers for everyone who came out in force this week too.
Quite a lot of people want to give us titles for rock operas.
And so if we don't get yours this week, we apologise. Don't let it put you off trying again.
Yeah.
There's no reason you can't make it next week.
Yeah, so do you want to hear some rockable mentions?
What? Operable mentions?
Operable mentions? Rock operable mentions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They look better. We workshopped it for a while.
From Conor Lavelle, we've got Stinky Francois.
Stinky Francois?
Yeah, Stinky Francois.
Oh, so this is a really, really bad, low-budget rock opera remake of Perfume. The incredible French film about the guy with a great sense of smell and then uses it to like try and get the best smells ever by killing people. Are you familiar with the film Perfume? Because it is fantastic. It's beautifully shot. It's really dark. Some great acting. All in French.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, not seeing it then. Nah.
Spoiler, the film ends with an entire village-wide orgy.
What? Really?
Wow. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, wait, so this is a rock opera version of
Perfume.
Perfume.
Perfume. Stinky Francois.
Stinky Francois.
A rock opera version of Perfume, but I'm thinking like the main character's like a kid who has a really good sense of smell, but he's also like a really gruesome bloke.
It's definitely going to start... I think this film for sure has a narrator. You know, like Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. He's like a fat, squat man with an accordion. He's like, I'll tell you a tale of a boy who could smell.
And he's in every single shot, but like on the bottom right-hand corner of the screen where there's a person that does a sign language. It's just him with a fucking accordion.
With an accordion, yeah.
Occasionally he looks up as if he's looking at what's happening on the screen, but he can't see it, so he's just out of time.
We should do this like a stage musical.
Okay.
So, with a narrator... he's not, he doesn't have to be in the corner of the screen. He can be among the characters, like talking to Stinky Francois, going like, "Oh, Francois, it's so difficult to be you."
And Stinky Francois, played by Tom Holland with a hunchback and
you're
boils on his face.
Smelling the wee. You're just... smelling the poo.
The poo.
The poo.
Zapoo is also a character.
Hey, I'm Zapoo.
He's a trader of spices.
Zapoo is a genie that comes from a perfume bottle.
Both?
Yeah. A genie that trades spices.
Zooey and Zapoo. One's a genie and one's a trader of spices.
Zooey and Zapoo.
Yeah. This is how stupid rock operas get, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because shit just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And like.
It's starting to feel Disney animated as well.
Only because it's like feeling very on the fringes of racist.
Yeah. I was going to put forward Danny DeVito as the Stinky Francois.
Well, Tom Holland is Stinky Francois. The narrator can be Danny DeVito.
Yeah, yeah, the narrator is Danny DeVito.
But as he is in Hercules.
Yes. Little goat legs.
Accordion. Stinky Francois.
It's because it's about this child. We all sympathise with. We're all sympathising because he's got this. The smell is too strong. And this is what's great is that you can have like you can cut away to the audience and they're holding their nose because you've got like people wafting smells out from the stage.
I just love at the end you say the film perfume ends in a giant orgy. I'm just loving the idea that this is all filmed again, but Danny DeVito drops his accordion, turns around, and then
gets in.
Just puts his hands to the screen, and goes, "No! Let me in! I want to be part of the orgy!"
The key here being that this child is eventually going to grow up to be a person who murders people. So we get this first two acts of, or like the first act of him being a really sympathetic character, and then Black Mirror, like we metamorphose him into a monster.
So what happens in the actual film Perfume?
Yeah.
Is that he's searching for the perfect smell essentially, and he discovers that as you kill someone, their last sort of ever like pheromones that they release when they're dying is like really exquisite, very like unique smell, and he's trying to use that to create the perfect perfume. And then when they discover that he's sort of killed these women and skinned them and all this kind of stuff, it's very very dark. He then uses it to essentially escape. He like drops the whole like vat of this incredible thing that he's made, which causes everyone just to be like completely overcome with lust because of the smell.
Wow. Well, that
I think happens. I could be misremembering.
But that's great because what happens is in the film of this being filmed, like in this theater, he dumps a vat all the way down the center aisle, and then you just see shots of like everyone in the theater just jumping on each other.
But Zooey and Zapoo escape from the vat of perfume
by hiding in Zapoo's bottle.
Yeah. When he smashes it on the ground, that's when they all escape. And then, yeah, they just make everyone have it. They go out and go, "Have an orgy!" Do it!
Danny DeVito is speaking to the camera. "Have an orgy! Out there! Go on!"
"I can't get involved in this one because there's a screen in the way."
"But there's also a screen on this side."
Wait, where do you think the screen is?
But, like, Danny DeVito, right, is stuck in between the screen on the TV
right.
or the cinema and the screen that he's stood in front of.
What screen is he stood in front of?
He's also at a cinema screen, but
this
the
is
one
a theater,
that's been filmed.
Not a movie theater.
Yeah, exactly, right. Because he's watching the film as well. He's at a cinema, and the whole film is being filmed by someone in the audience.
The film is actually like a solid 5 hours long, but the first two hours is just the film. The other 3 hours is him sitting in front of a blank screen, just like.
So the
Hope
true
you all
version
got your
of this
phones
film.
Off.
So this true version of this film looks like a pirated wobbly handicap video.
Yeah, with Danny DeVito stood in front signing everything with an accordion.
What?
Yeah.
Well, rock operas do subvert the genre. So.
They do subvert the genre.
Subverted the genre of film.
Usually they don't subvert any sense whatsoever. Let's
so
move
what,
on.
What band's it going to be?
Aqua.
Aqua. Fuck.
The Spice Girls.
Of course.
Of course, yeah, no, yeah, that makes sense.
And we and Zipu are played by Mel B and Mel C, respectively.
Yep.
Just some Mels.
Just some Mels. Smells.
Wait, that was the other thing. I was too subtle, but thanks for pointing it out for me.
Okay, so from Charlotte Russell, we've got Butterface.
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 Oh, no.
Is this how it starts? Someone walks onto stage.
Looks into a cot and goes, oh, no. Inside the cot is Butterface.
Well, it's
the
because
birth
it's
of Butterface.
It's about a woman whose body is that of a crab. But her face... What?
Go on, go on. I feel the, like I know where
she's got the
this.
Most beautiful face in the world,
yeah.
But the body is that of a crab. So, like, it's about someone who's completely unlovable, but her face is so beautiful, but her face.
Brilliant. I'm 100%.
So
up.
Well done. Let's move on.
She's the number one. She becomes the number one like model in photography. We're talking like Edwardian era, Victorian era, right? So photographic like advertising is just starting to come into a thing, right? No, it's like 50s and 60s, isn't it? When that starts to happen.
Yeah.
So like, I learned that from Guillermo del Toro's masterpiece, Shape of Water. So. Let's talk 60s.
Yeah.
And they're looking for people to have like close-ups enjoying, I don't know, this hat manufacturer is looking
just laughing with salad, that kind of
thing. Yeah, laughing with salad. Yeah, absolutely.
We all understand laughing with salad.
Crabs laughing with salad is what the subtitle of this film is. So...
Butterface.
But it's because the reason they're doing it is because they don't have very good editing technology for the photos.
Yeah.
So it has to be like a real life edit in the sense of like where they position people, etc., yeah. etc. And they do it so they've got them, but they can zoom in the shot and then they get someone to stand behind them who's like a hand model
yeah.
to like hold the cutlery and yes. things like that. So it's all like layered, but in real life.
Oh my
and
god!
And it makes it so much better because this person because Butterface has like a tiny little crab body. It's really easy to like hide that using yeah. other things.
Well, that's the thing because this entire family are sewer mutants.
Mm.
That's why they've got the bodies of crabs. So, but it was just.
I love how Butterface got scouted. She was out on the beach scuttling around.
No, so what happened was there's a brilliant scene where someone comes over and he's like, "Oh, you look fantastic! I can't believe your friends have buried you up to your head in the sand and just abandoned you." And there's this moment where she just goes, "What?" and then stands up out of the sand, with you and crab body. The guy just screams and runs into the sea and keeps going.
A photographer is photographing the beach and he sees this beautiful face buried up to her neck in sand.
So I'm guessing this is Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Oh, did you just acknowledge the existence of Jennifer Lawrence?
Agnostic.
You're getting there. So Jennifer Lawrence, I'm just imagining, right, this is quite a weird bit, but Breaking Bad, you know,
right?
There's a bit where they sever Danny Trejo's head
yeah.
and put it on a turtle.
Yes.
I'm thinking it's kind of like that. So it's a crab.
But on the back of the crab.
On the back of the crab is just Jennifer Lawrence's head.
See, I was thinking a giant crab person. Like, yeah. almost human size, maybe a little bit smaller.
Oh, so
with
like...
just out of the front, like a head.
Yeah. It was either, a giant crab with the head of Jennifer Lawrence just on the top.
What about a long spindly neck where those two eye stalks normally are? That kind of reaches up.
Or just, I was thinking like an anthropomorphized crab. So it's like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
How does that work? Like
Jennifer Lawrence in a crab suit, but they're just not, they can have a budget for the head.
Yeah. Like, right. Like Patrick Stewart when he's taking those selfies of himself in the bath dressed as a lobster. Like that.
Yeah. Well, why not? Okay.
I'm quite liking the giant crab with her head on its back.
So
because that would make it incredibly interesting to look at. Like, why have they done that?
So this is a rock opera, right?
Yeah.
So we've got to start
rock lobster.
Yeah, we've got to start with crab people in the sewers scuttling away from human interaction, right? They're hiding from
but they've all got horrible faces. Weird, twisted, deformed
But
faces.
They all think she's
horrific.
Horrific, because she's got such a beautiful face. So
get out of here, Jennifer Lawrence.
They're all scuttling away from, like, it's great because in they sort of on set, they're sort of they run to one side and then like light pours in from one thing and it's like the light of a car or something, like streaming through the gaps in a drain. Great. And then they're like, "Ah, get out of the light! They might see us! We'll have to fight the humans!"
Stay away from the humans! Da-dun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a rock song.
And then a young girl is born to a family of these crab mutants. And she's beautiful. Look at her shell! Look at her legs! Smell the smell! But her face!
So the musically speaking, everything that's shot below ground with the crab people is minor key.
Okay.
And everything above ground with the naught is everyone else's major key.
Just yes. Gonna... Definitely. I'm thinking definitely as a sort of.
So a lot of the songs are exactly the same.
Yes.
But just in a major good key idea. When they become above ground.
That's quite novel.
Good idea.
Works great in theory. I can imagine it being very difficult to do in practice.
Yes.
Yes, of course. So, like, every time...
And the reason she's ugly below ground is because she's singing in a major key.
Yeah.
And the song is in a minor key.
It's but when happy
she becomes,
feet.
But when she comes above ground, finally, she's fit in.
This rock opera is Happy Feet.
With mutant crab Jennifer Lawrence.
You were just doing things in a way that didn't fit your society.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then she goes above. She's wandering out onto the beach. She's like, man.
Starts a modelling career for face modelling.
Well, not yet. She's got to be discovered by a young photographer who, like, takes a photo of her face.
Yeah.
He's like, "You're so beautiful. Why have you been buried up to your neck in sand?" And then she, like, gets up and...
No, she's like... Yeah, I just like doing it. And then for the rest of the film, she's trying to hide her giant crab body.
Like, wearing a big floofy dress everywhere.
It's like that bit in Simpsons where they're like trying to not show Bart's dick.
it's like three children sat on each other's shoulders trying to pass off as a human being. But with a giant crab body.
And then...
there's the dramatic irony in the film.
And then it's revealed in the third act, sort of revealed that she's a crab.
No, this is... Right. It's revealed in the third act, and then we cut back to the birth of Butterface.
What?
So the first scene is her being discovered on the beach.
On a beach, okay.
And the audience don't know she's got a giant crab body.
It'll be in the trailers, though, surely.
No, no. The trailers...
Why is this film called Butterface? She's beautiful.
The trailers make it out to be just like a movie about a woman getting a modelling career.
Oh, no. Yeah, so the poster is face, right?
Yeah.
But there's like the last T and the apostrophe for face, like butterface is like smeared butter.
Yeah.
And so, like,
so it makes it out to be about butter.
But no, like, yeah, it looks like it says Butterface. Mm. But if you take away the smeared butter, it's actually smeared butter on every single poster across the land. it says Butterface.
So, like, no one going into this movie has any idea about the crab body.
It's also only advertised in Red Lobster restaurants.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. It's also the way that Butterface comes into it is that, like, she gets discovered as being a crab in the end of the second act. And the darkest point is where the casting agency are trying to decide whether she's worth more money as a model or as dinner.
And there's just a shot of them walking through a kitchen with stacks of butter in the background.
Exactly.
Like,
And then so one leery casting agent, one leery, like, photographer guy, who's like, oh, I just need to try out this new lovely makeup on you, and starts rubbing butter into her face.
Oh, fucking hell. I love this movie. Why can't we make these?
So the third act is the ending of the third act is her realization that if you push a minor key far enough, it becomes a major key again. So it's actually
wow,
a really
this is
technical
a music
musical
theory.
Film.
It's a music theory film.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
While also being about a giant crab lady.
I mean, I reckon you could put that in there somewhere. You could have that, like, just happen in the background.
Subplot.
Not even a subplot. You can just have that happen to the music, and then people will pick it apart later. Mm, I guarantee they will, and they'll go, oh, it's so clever, it's the new Hamilton.
It's the new Hamilton.
Yeah.
That's what people are saying about Butterface.
Yeah.
I'd prefer the new Birdman, but I'll take it.
Yeah, that's all the honourable mentions for this week. Thank you, everyone who's given us titles. We've had, like, the last few months, I would say, we've been given an absolute ton of titles to pitch. So thank you, everyone who's given us titles. Keep it up.
Keep them coming.
That's all I'll say. Remember, you can find us on soundcloud.com/Lives of Pitch Podcast. That's where all our episodes are. You can find us on iTunes, basically anywhere that you can get podcasts. Really.
Yeah, we'll be there probably.
Yeah.
And if not, tell them.
Yeah, tell people where you can find us.
No, I mean, like, if not, if your podcast that service doesn't have us, tell them.
I thought you were talking about sharing, but no
tell
the people
off.
In charge.
Yeah.
Why isn't this on
Speak
here?
Truth to power.
You little shit.
I'll tell you what, mate, you Mr. Hoity-toity startup exec doing a podcast service.
Yeah.
Tell you what, you better get that on there.
Yeah.
You're nothing.
Going back to my point, remember to share it, guys. Remember to share it around.
Absolutely nothing.
Tell your friends, tell your family.
Anyone who you think would be interested in a podcast, this particular podcast, anyone who likes films, just send them a little linko. Linko at soundcloud.com/livespitchpodcast.
Yeah, do that.
Many people have been sharing the podcast, and that's great. Thank you guys so much. If you want to help out in another way, you can go over to patreon.com/livespitchpodcast, where you can find a load of bonus content, an extra pitch every single week. You can have behind the scenes stuff. There are, like, bonus little snippets and preview stuff. Basically depends on how much you donate, but just helping us out with a little monthly contribution really goes a long, long way. And so we are so thankful to every single member of that crew we are accruing.
Those people who support us on Patreon, they are Ross_Originals, My Waste of Talent, Brandon Spanky Mills, Joe Hegarty, Brent Black, Darius the Unsettling, Mihir Trivedi, and Alex Keane. Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers, guys. You are genuinely keeping the dang thing going and making it better.
Yeah, yeah. Supporting costs $1 a month at least. So $1 a month is nothing, really.
Yeah, you can just
25 cents a week.
And you know what? For that $1, you get to vote on what genre we do.
Yeah.
Meaning that you could have prevented this.
Yes, yes. No, yeah.
You could have stopped Butterface from happening. Shall we crack on with
yes,
the show and
yeah.
and head on to our main pitch?
Yeah, we've got a Yes Very Clever Award to give away before.
Ooh. A Yes Very Clever Award?
A Yes Very Clever Award. I'll play the sting.
Yes, very clever.
Yeah, so this Yes, Very Clever award, if you haven't listened to an episode before, we give away a Yes, Very Clever award to a title that we've been giving that is already based on an existing title.
Or is just so punny it hurts.
Yes.
So, you know.
This one this week has been given to us by the man who's given us the main title, Unklesab Mihirji, and he's given us Rock of Operages.
Oh, Rock of Operages.
Operages, yes. Which I'm pretty sure Rock of Ages is a rock. It's a musical.
Yes, it's a rock musical.
Rock opera, yeah.
Rock of Operages.
I mean, just get Rock of Ages, really.
Yeah, just, I tell you what.
Rock of Ages and cut all the speaking bits out.
That's a perfect example of a Yes, Very Clever award. Because, like, what were we going to do with that? We're just going to pitch Rock of Ages.
Yeah. So, on with today's main pitch. And that is from Unklesab Mihirji. Remember, if I said your name wrong, I'm sorry. That is Dance to Save My Mother's Life.
Dance to Save My Mother's Life? Yes.
Oh, it's a toughie, this
one. It's a toughie, isn't it?
I only have an incredibly dark pitch.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that.
Oh.
I'm thinking, like, because I think with a title like this, people are expecting it to go dark.
It's, unless you do something incredibly touching, you can't not do dark. Because at some point in this film, there's going to be a dying mother. Right?
Or a captured mother.
Yeah, well,
A ransomed mother.
Yeah, exactly. Which is going to be dark, right?
It's not. Like, the baby in Labyrinth is captured and ransomed.
Yeah, but the baby in Labyrinth isn't having its life threatened.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's going to be turned into a goblin.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's not going to be a human anymore.
And let me tell you something, right? He's already got a lot of goblins. Doesn't seem that bad. You can just kick chickens and, like, chase things around and roll. That's what goblins do. They sing in choruses.
In Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, think about that for a sec. Not the worst fate you can imagine. Living in a fantasy world.
Yeah, but, like,
dancing around.
I think, yeah, maybe the mother gets kidnapped at some point.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, that's a very vague start.
Yeah, you're right.
What it is, it's a whimsical remake of a reverse Saw movie. Right, hear me out.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, with nods to, like, the golden age of cinema, like Singing in the Rain stuff.
So the mother is stolen.
Yeah.
And it's the mother of, like, a really well-known professional dancer.
Mm.
And what happens is it's not like a ransom. He's got to get through a series of tricks and trials to get to where the mother is in, like, a weird sort of labyrinthian style thing.
Oh.
And the only way he can do it is by, like, dancing through the traps, because they're all designed in such a way that you have to be able to really good at dancing to get through them.
There's this guy plays
That's
by...
why I was quiet for so long. Really, really thinking hard this guy, about this.
I want to say played by who's getting on but is still fairly young. Anthony Head, right?
Yeah.
He's been in rock operas before.
Good call.
Anthony Head plays a silver screen, like, classics dancer.
Like Dancing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a Clark Gable.
Yes,
A Jimmy Stewart kind of guy.
He's called Fenchurch Bingham.
That does sound like a golden age of cinema.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it's
Fenchurch Bingham. Back with another classic.
Starring alongside Scarlet Housewater.
Again, sounds right. But yeah, so he's
The Empire Only Knocks Twice.
But he's it's good. Yeah. He's famous for The Empire Only Knocks Twice. And like he was
a tap dance movie.
He was the toast of the town. He was the toast of LA. Mm. But he gave it all up.
Mm.
After something happened. I don't know what happened.
Is this The Artist meets Saw?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gave it all up For some reason, I haven't quite figured out why yet. But
his mother's got dementia, so he had to look after her.
Okay, and then a super fan is like, "No, we need to have another film."
Oh, and they've got loads of cameras and stuff. So as they're trying to get through all these traps and they're doing the dancing, when he gets to the end, the climax of the film is the bad guy has like edited it into an actual film of him dancing.
It's a movie producer. It's not a super fan.
Yeah, a movie producer, and he gets to the end and he watches the film of him going through and he goes, maybe I should get back into dancing. But as he's watching, his mum's confused and just walks and falls down a trap.
Well,
and dies.
Well, back in like the...
save her life.
Back in like the 50s, 60s, I think it still kind of goes on now, but like studios would have a contract with the actors and they would basically market their lives. So I think it might still go on now where like actors would date certain... other actors.
Well, this is what the entirety of what's it called? The Only Way Is Essex and stuff.
Mm.
Programs like that. They're mostly just acting, and they've signed away their lives to like live like that.
Yeah. So yeah.
Signed away their lives. Sort of thing. So he didn't realize he'd signed away his life.
Yeah. And so he tries to do like like what Rick Moranis did when his wife died. Go just quit Hollywood. Yeah. Look after his kids.
Yes.
So, like, his mother needs constant care and attention, and his money can't pay for a carer, apparently. But
More like she's gonna forget him. You gotta spend as much time as possible.
Yeah. And so,
she taught him to dance.
That whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, and that lays an amazing scene at the end when she dances through the traps to save him.
Mm. That would be pretty good. But so Anthony Head's the main guy. Who's the big fat producer?
I like the idea of him never being on screen.
You just see a fireplace.
Who's the voice of Scar?
Oh, Jeremy Irons.
I think it should be Jeremy Irons.
or Jim Cummings.
Because he's got a great singing voice.
They both played Scar.
Jim Cummings, the voice of Winnie the Pooh.
And Tigger 2.
And Tigger 2.
Jim Cummings. Yeah, no, that's a better one.
Jim Cummings voiced Scar at the end of Be Prepared. Something they've now cut from the live-action version of The Lion King.
Oh, that's weird. But
the best song in it.
I'm just thinking, instead of seeing the actual producer, you just hear Jim Cummings' Winnie the Pooh voice the entire time.
Oh, bother. Oh, bother.
Oh, Piglet. Piglet.
Is he Russian or any of the boys? Oh, Piglet.
Piglet.
Oh, Piglet.
But yeah, all you see is the fireplace and his hand on the armchair.
Holding a glass of brandy and swilling it.
Yeah.
Or Merlot.
As Rowan Atkinson comes into the room.
Rowan Atkinson?
What? Rowan Atkinson's like his assistant.
Okay.
Who's setting up all the traps.
Hunchback.
Yeah. He's like, hello, sir.
It's actually Rowan Atkinson. He thinks it's a role that he's method acting for. And there's like a subplot of him just like...
What was the name of Anthony Head's character? Fenchurch.
Fenchurch Hardwick?
No. It's Fenchurch something.
So Fenchurch.
Bingham.
Fenchurch Bingham. Fenchurch Bingham has broken contracts, sir. He's gone to work caring for his elderly mother.
And then you just hear, well, it takes two to tango.
It takes two to tango. Piglet.
What? He calls him Piglet. Atkinson's character is called Piglet.
He's dressed in a giant Piglet costume.
It takes two to tango. He's like, I've worked in films all my life.
Instead of brandy, it's honey.
Which is the shot of him trying to swill it in a glass is just comical as all fuck.
Piglet's dressed in a giant Piglet outfit from Disneyland.
Oh my god, what if? Right, what if?
I'm loving this really dark and moving film we're pitching.
What if Winnie the Pooh was a send-up of this person? We posit that in old Hollywood... Wait, when was Winnie the Pooh written?
Winnie the Pooh was written...
A while ago.
Like, yeah, I think during the war.
At least the early noughties.
Yeah.
Okay, so having something like...
For the early...
Having them called Winfred Poville would maybe...
Winfred Poville! Yes.
I don't know why you chose Winnie the Pooh's voice.
You said Jim Cummings. I would just
yeah,
like
but Jim
Winnie
Cummings
the Pooh.
has got the like the best growly voice. He plays the bad guy in Mickey Mouse. You know the big I can't remember what his name
but
is.
But I just love the idea of Winnie the Pooh being essentially Claw from Inspector Gadget.
So he's like, I've worked in films all my life, and I've never seen anyone break contract as badly as
Fenchurch
Bingham.
Yeah.
Go and sort out the traps, Piglet.
He's got them all set up anyway.
Yeah.
For when a singing and dancing actor breaks contract.
Normally it's like a training hall. Like it's all these things, but they're all covered in foam, so they jump over them and stuff.
Mm.
But now they've been converted into anyway, this is a rock opera.
Yep.
Yeah. I got bogged down in evil setup.
So I can just imagine, though, like Fenchurch Bingham is like singing like silver screen, like golden age stuff, like might even be singing the actual songs, but in a rock opera style.
Oh, and the only, so as a stylistic note, he always sings. The only person he ever talks to is his mother.
Mm. Yes. Oh, that's good. I like that. Yeah, because everything else is a performance.
Yep.
Ah, nice. Nice, nice, nice. I like that very much.
So he does Singing in the Rain, but it's acid rain.
I think it's just a Singing in the Rain, but like a cover of which is like a rock ballad.
No, it's got to be like hurtful. It's like Saw. So they've captured his mother and he's got to go through... Basically, he's got to go through all the back lots of this movie studio.
All the sets that he saved, Winfred saved... Winfred Poville has saved from all his previous movies, and he's like, I'm singing in the rain, and there's pain around every corner.
Yeah.
there's just a bit where he stood in the middle of an empty street, and he's like, there's like weird like lamps and everything, and he's looking around and he goes, no, not Greece, and she's hit by a car.
I like the idea that basically at some point
John Travolta is driving this car around the lot.
And as he goes through
screeching around the corner, he's just driving around constantly. Like occasionally, like it doesn't happen once, it just happens every random point.
It's always John Travolta.
Always John Travolta. Olivia Newton-John in the boot. Like, help me! Get me out, please.
I only wanted to get to Xanadu. So I like the idea that as he's going through this, there's either a hallucinogenic gas, or he's been given a hallucinogen that's making all these sets like more and more twisted. Mm. So like as he gets
like
to the Arkham Singing
Asylum,
in the Rain,
Batman,
yes,
Scarecrow.
Yes, exactly. So like as he's going through, it's like flashbacks to his early childhood where he doesn't realize, but Winfred Poville has like seeded people to make him a star. Like he doesn't realize how much he owed his stardom to. He's been like a
been
his
made
mum,
by him.
His mum taught him to dance, but Winfred Poville's like selected him from a school, and when like you like give him this role sort of thing. Mm. Didn't realize how much his life's been controlled.
There's a brilliant bit where he has to. It just cuts to not actually re-edited or re-anything. It literally cuts to Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical bit with his bit in it, and then cuts back to the movie.
Anthony Head just singing along.
Yeah.
We need some more Golden Age musical things.
Good.
La La Land.
I mean, we can even go to things like Mary Poppins, right? Or we can go sort of like we can go to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and all
Bend
the little
Broomsticks.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. What else?
That's Disney one's done.
He's surrounded by chimney sweeps, just hitting him with sticks.
Well, he finds all himself. He stumbles out of a door.
Dick Van Dyke cloned onto each one of them.
Yeah.
He stumbles out of a doorway onto a series of rooftops, and he thinks, I'm out.
Oh, oh no. No.
I've got out.
And then it's like the birds, these chimney sweeps appear. And he keeps looking around, there's more of them.
And he realizes that he's in a set, like the Truman Show. Like, the sky isn't really the sky. It's a matte painting.
And they all approach from all sides going, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim.
Yes.
Like, Jim, what is it,
Jiminy,
Warriors?
Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy. And then he's, like, hitting
Jim,
him
Jiminy,
with the...
Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy.
That scene from Shaun of the Dead where they're all hitting him with the snooker cues. It's like they're hitting him to the beat of Jim, Jiminy. Jim.
And then the background, like a big harness, it's the guitarist from Mad Max. Like in the background. No, he's there in every scene. He plays the backing music.
And there's like, Chim Chimini, Chim Chimini, Chim Chim Chiroo. Once your mother's dead, then what will you do?
Fucking hell.
Like, but he has to fight them off using the power of dance. Yeah. And then
Chim Chimini, Chim Chimini, Chim Chim Chiroo. We'll give you her back when you get back on the silver screen.
Wow, that was a lot.
Yes,
of
that was
words.
A lot. Like I said, I'm terrible at putting words to music.
Chim chimini, chim chimini, chim chim chirai. If you don't hurry up, your mother will die.
It's better.
So yeah, we need a couple of actual. Right. So we've designed this ridiculous labyrinth of traps. Now we need some actual plot beats because we've done a couple of songs now.
Do we? Does Saw have plot beats?
I think yeah, he does have. Have you seen Saw?
But, right.
We've seen Saw. It's got some plot beats.
This film does not have to be complex. It's a rock opera.
Sure, but
mother gets stolen.
It's
he
a
goes
rock
through
opera,
trials.
So we can make it just that one thing better, where they've gone through these flashbacks of him learning the things. He never knew who his father was.
It's someone completely irrelevant to the story.
No. We are going down this specific rabbit hole because it's exactly right for the genre.
It's Rowan Atkinson.
It's Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah.
And Rowan Atkinson kills Winfred Poville at the very end.
Drowns him in honey.
Yes. Or just poisons his honey with the acid rain.
That song's called The Sticky Situation. We're in a sticky situation.
I'm in a sticky situation.
Oh no, it's not Poville singing that. It's Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, right.
For sure.
Fair enough.
And there's a drum solo in it. An invisible drum solo.
No, it's It's Rowan Atkinson playing on pots and pans in the kitchen.
Just cut to Rowan Atkinson doing the invisible drum bit on stage.
It wants to be so low budget that they keep having to cut to films these actors have been in that are sort of musicals.
We can have Rowan Atkinson doing without sticks or anything, just like on pots and pans, and it's just making the noises like.
You don't need it. He does a whole bit in his stand-up show where he does a.
Okay, but I'm saying we use that.
No, we make reference
to that.
Direct cut.
Okay.
Direct cut to that. Like the Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
If we can work out enough direct cuts, we can actually make this movie.
How are we going to twist, like...
You just play Saw in reverse.
How are we going to twist the lamppost for him to be dancing around in the acid rain on and stuff? Like, we got to Tim Burtonize this whole thing.
You just do Singing in the Rain, direct cut to that, stick his face on top of it and put a green filter on it.
Yeah,
done.
And add screams in the background.
Okay.
That's how it's done. Yeah, and I think, he just gets... He kills... Rowan Atkinson kills Winfred Poville.
And what's a really nice ironic death for him to undergo?
Drowned in honey.
Why?
The sweet release of
that,
death.
How is that ironic?
Because he loves drinking honey. He's
Winnie the Pooh. Just because you said he sounded like Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. He's called Winfred Poville. And we said earlier...
Oh, so we've established that he's the basis of the Winnie the Pooh character. Okay, gotcha.
He just loves honey.
Yeah, all right. Fine. I mean, we're playing fast and loose with history in this rock opera, and I'm not happy about it.
When have we ever played slow and tight with history?
I mean, let me put it this way. Jesus Christ Superstar.
We pitched a film last week with Isaac Newton and Henry VIII at the same time period.
Yeah, but that's because we'd established a baseline of time portals.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did. We said it in the pitch.
Oh, yeah, actually. We did. But this one, it's a film pitch, Matt.
No,
we can go to Paramount with this.
I've kind of got it. Well, yeah, to be fair, Jesus Christ Superstar, there are people in, 80s flares and, leather chaps who also have spears. And they pull up in a bus with a cross on top, and then they get out, and then they all use spears and are dancing around in old temples. So I think we can maybe play a little Fast and Loose.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know how earlier we had this realization that Winfred Povill had been slowly, sort of his entire life, he'd been seeding these things to then have our main character become the great TV screen that he is.
Yep.
There's also flashes back to Rowan Atkinson literally planting very slow-growing seeds inside the chair of Winfred Povill that grow through him and kill him. So we're gonna kill him with literal seeding. Is that enough for you? Is that what you wanted? Are you happy now?
Yeah, we just have a scene. We have a scene where there's a whole to do about trying to get Winfred off his chair because
he's literally too deeply rooted in tradition.
He's so difficult to move. He's so fat. He can't get off this chair, and they have to pick him up because he's like, "No, sir, I need to clean your chair. I need to clean your chair." And we see him put some seeds in and water them. And then later on, that can come back when the sprouts start growing.
Genuinely good bit I've come up with just now. Rowan Atkinson was a black and white silent film hero.
Okay.
Rowan Atkinson was a black and white silent film hero because he's really good at physical humour.
Yes.
So it's not a push for...
No, that is
basically,
true.
That's my point.
And that's what... It's like a dark reflection of what could happen to Fenchurch Bingham. I've written it down.
For those of you not watching on the live stream.
I've written it down and I had to look. This is what could happen.
Fenchurch Bingham.
Well, that's a dark reflection of what could happen to Fenchurch Bingham, because Rowan Atkinson is a broken man.
Yeah, he's dressed as Piglet.
He worked for Winfred Povill for too long, was broken by the roles he gave him, and actually ended up breaking his back on a really ambitious dancing.
I love what you said. We're playing
scene.
Fast and Loose of history. We're also playing fast and loose of our own roles, because Winfred Povill is dressed as Winnie the Pooh as well, but. Winnie the Pooh was based on Winfred Povill in this alternate history.
Well, no, he's not.
You leave his first.
He's not dressed as Winnie the Pooh. He's dressed like Winfred Povill, but that happens to resemble Winnie the Pooh.
It's just
now...
red shorts.
No, it's just a red t-shirt and no pants.
Yeah, I forgot.
Oh boy, and that's why all the shorts are from behind.
Right.
And Rowan Atkinson's in a pink striped jumper. And pants.
No, he's dressed as Piglet.
Full on Piglet suit.
Yeah, but that's what Piglet wears.
Full on Disney mascot Piglet.
Pink striped jumper and pants.
Yeah. And he takes the mask and he's put the mask back on.
Put the mask back on.
Get it on.
Sorry. Tom, let me ask you a question. You know when you were thinking of Winnie the Pooh singing in this rock opera?
Yes.
Just how did you intend for him to sound singing a rock ballad? Could you give us a few bars of that, potentially?
What do you want me to sing?
He raps. Winnie the Pooh's voice.
What do you want me to sing?
I don't know. Just make something up. Should be easy. You've got the seeds of this idea.
Oh.
Should be pretty easy, right?
I would do anything for you. I would do anything for you.
Lyrics wrong for a start.
Piglet.
Piglet. Piglet. do anything for love, Piglet. All right. We've just got to stop this. We've got to cease
this. And then the final shot of the film is Christopher Robin stood over a giant dollhouse with all the players, and he looks directly into the camera, and then it ends.
Directly in the camera and goes, go die.
I think the end has to be that they wheel Winfred Poville in his chair up, because he's now grown into his chair. All the vines have grown him onto the chair. They wheel him onto the rooftops of Chim Chim Chiroo, and then kick him off a building.
No, I was going to say they kill him by dragging him down a set of steps. Yikes. Much like the actual Winnie the Pooh. Because there's a whole bit where he's being carried up the steps, but Christopher Robin holds him by his leg.
Oh,
so his head
God.
Hits the step on every single bit, and it's just done, it's that, death, but yeah. Like, with actual...
How did we get to Winnie the Pooh? From
love it.
Dance this... to Save Your Mother's Life. How did we get here?
Oh, and the working title is 100 Acre Blood.
We had such a concise theme with, like, Golden Age of Cinema.
That was the original title. The producers were like, it's not going to land. Have you seen the film? Nah, we just don't like the title. Oh, my.
Who has hijacked this film?
Oh, my good Lord. Right. Yep. So, that was Dance to Save My Mother's Life.
Yep.
If you enjoyed it, please listen to the other episode, because there's more like this on soundcloud.com/Life's a Pitch podcast.
None exactly like this, but it never ceases to amaze me just how... when we started this podcast, I thought, well, maybe it's got a limited run. There's only so many films you can make.
158 episodes in, and we're like, yeah, no, Winnie the Pooh is an evil film producer.
I could do this for another 300.
Go to that website, soundcloud.com/Life's a Pitch podcast. Also, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, facebook.com/Life's a Pitch podcast, and Twitter @Life's a Pitch show as well. Remember to go to the Patreon if you want to give us any more support. Monetary support, even, to make the show just better.
Yep.
Really, it'll give us some more time to
buy equipment and such like. We've been sort of putting off doing more Skype-based episodes, as in episodes with guests from further afield. Because we're having some tech issues, and the patrons' donations are helping to solve that. Mm. So that's always very, very helpful of them.
Yeah. Thank you to all our current patrons as well.
Paul, where can people find you and the things you do?
You can find me mostly with Strike Comedy on www.facebook.com/strikecomedy, or it could just be Strike. I'm not entirely sure at this point.
We had this discussion with Shannon last week.
Yeah, if you Google it, you'll find it. It's STURIKE. Yeah. If you want to be really technical, you need to Alt-129 to create a U with an umlaut for the strike. God, I've been doing this for so long. there's a lot of stuff on there. We do many podcasts. We do a lot of live shows. If you live in Sheffield, keep an eye on our Facebook page for some live gigs coming up soon.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter if you want to see what I get made for lunch, because actually, like that, while that sounds like the shittiest Twitter thing in the world, the kitchen staff at my work are immensely creative.
Where do you work, Matt?
I'm not saying.
It's just reminding me that in the past 3 days, I created my own Twitter account.
Yeah.
I used to have the Strike one, which is still going. But I have @TheTrigIsUp. Which is my maths Twitter.
The trig
such
is
a nerd.
Up.
The name of it is Trigonometry.
Nice.
And you can check out my last 3 tweets.
Yay!
And Tom, your defunct one is
the Life's a Pitch show one.
Oh yeah, you may as well use that to get. That too.
I'm on Life's a Pitch. I don't think I've updated my actual Twitter, which is Tom the Director, for nearly a year.
Nice.
I used to post band names every day, and then I stopped.
Then you stopped because you got a better creative output.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. Go and follow us on the things. Thank you for listening. And Until you are dragged back into a line of work you avowed you'd never go back to by an evil Winnie the Pooh man. And have to sing to save your mother's life. I've been Matt Turner.
I've been Tom McGrath.
I've been Paul Beauchamp.
Remember who pitched it.
Bye!